I should say that I have no human rights background. I have an environmental justice background, but so my intention is to present a situation that we are living through in Central America and hopefully discuss that within a human rights framework later on. And actually the expert in looking at this issue through a human rights lens is actually Wyvonne, so hopefully we'll be able to kind of draw on some of that expertise later in the discussion period. I work in Costa Rica at the National University, there at a research institute called EDIT, which is a collaborating center for the World Health Organization, and it's the Regional Institute for Toxic Substances, region being Central America. And in the program SALTRA, which is a program Health, Work, and Environment in Central America. So this work is done through that. And what I thought I would talk about is a little bit of the issue that's kind of near and dear to my heart, which is heat exposure in men that cut sugar cane in Costa Rica, and explain why this is an important issue for us for two main reasons. One is an epidemic of chronic kidney disease that Wyvonne mentioned, and the other is climate change. And talk about some policy implications that we are exploring, one being the possibility of implementing heat-related or hydration-related policy in the workplace. I should say that I do environmental and occupational health, so my focus tends to be on workers. And then climate change policy. And really what I would, as I said, like to come back to is whether a human rights framework is an appropriate way of thinking about these issues. So we finished recently a three-year project extended to 4 years, looking at heat exposure in men that cut sugarcane in Costa Rica. And I will just present a little tiny bit of that to kind of lead us into the context that I like to talk about. But usually when I do that, I like to share this. This quote comes from when we started this project, we held a workshop with some men who've been cutting sugarcane for a long time and said, you know, this is what we're thinking of, how we're thinking of designing this study, what are your ideas, what do you think we should change, what do you think we should keep the same, that kind of thing. And at the end said, you know, is there anything else that you all think we should know as the researchers before we do this? And one of the men raised his hand and he said, I think what you should know is that most of us have worked in a lot of jobs, and I'll tell you this, this is the most savage work that exists and it's the lowest paying, so no one does this job unless they have to. And I present that because it's something that here we try to put a lot of numbers and apply a lot of international norms to something that is just really raw, and that's this. So why heat in the human body, and why study that? So human beings need to maintain a core body temperature. This is in Celsius because I come from Central America. But so we all need to maintain that body temperature, right? And things can affect that, one being a hot day, right, a humid day or a hot day with a little wind or lots of sun. The other is muscle movement. So as we play sports or carry out work, we create heat. But our bodies are really, really efficient at getting rid of that heat, and then usually that's not a problem. But when the heat from the external environment and from the internal muscle movement, and sometimes things like the way we're dressed because we're wearing personal equipment, like pesticide sprayers face this a lot because they're wearing rubber suits, or because we're not properly hydrated, or because we're sick or have some other underlying condition, we're not as efficient as we need to be at dumping that heat. And if we can't dump that heat, we get a health outcome, and that's a heat illness. And a heat illness can be anything from a headache, which most of us have maybe had, you know, as a result of being in the heat, to heat stroke. And heat stroke is a medical emergency. It is fatal if not treated. And heat stroke is an important and documented issue for working populations, specifically migrant populations working in agriculture in many places. But one thing I'd like to draw your attention to, this painting was actually done, commissioned by the United Farm Workers after two workers in the state of California, one worker in the state of Washington, died in 2006, I believe, maybe 2007, as a result of heat in the workplace. And so this was really, you know, trying to draw attention to that as being a real issue, not just an issue of whether or not we're comfortable. Why the sugarcane industry, and what does that mean to Costa Rica and to the region? Costa Rica is an important, sugar cane is an important industry for local consumption, but also for export, so sugar and alcohol-related products to some extent, biofuels. And it's an industry that's well known for hazards, high accident, accident-prone industry, especially because when the harvest starts, once the mill gets started, it doesn't stop until the harvest is done. And so it's just a really intense period where everyone who works in the industry is dedicated to this. And so it tends to be a time when people are tired and stressed. And additional to that, the men who cut sugarcane tend to be universally poor. Again, don't do that job unless you have to. They are subcontracted, which puts them in a much more vulnerable spot with their employer, and they tend to be, in our case, in Costa Rica, migrant workers coming usually from Nicaragua, although not entirely. So if you've never seen sugarcane being harvested, this is what it looks like, and I don't know how well you can see it, but men cut usually in pairs, and they're cutting down this row. So the sugarcane kind of goes like this in groups of two, and there are two rows and two men cut down a long row, and they bring their water. So, but they have to carry all the water that they're going to consume during the work shift, and they wrap them in blankets because it's really hot. They wrap them in wet blankets to keep them cooler a little longer. And after they've been working for a few hours, it looks like that, and they cut an incredible amount of sugarcane. But one of the things, when I said we try to put numbers on this, is this looks like a lot of work and it looks like a bad thing, but you know, what does this, you know, how can we show that? And how we can show that is using international norms. We used norms from Spain. We calculate the metabolic load, that is the amount of energy that it takes to carry out the work of cutting sugarcane. And this curve then is established by the norm. And it gives us a number on a heat index called, this is in Spanish, whoops, sorry, called a wet bulb globe temperature. And that's kind of how hot it feels. It's not dry temperature like we're used to hearing, but it is similar to like the heat index that you hear on the news. This is in Celsius. So basically what this means is that if I'm cutting sugarcane, I can do that safely without being at risk for heat-related health outcomes below 26 degrees wet bulb globe temperature. Above that, I need to slow down, take rest to be able to maintain my core body temperature and be in safe working conditions. So we measured that, and this is the device we use to measure that in the field. These are the guys cutting here. And what we find, this is that 26-degree mark. And OSHA, which is the Occupational Safety and Health Association here in the United States, actually has even stricter limits. So they say that at this 26-degree mark, men should be stopping at 25, or not stopping, lowering their metabolic load, slowing down for at least 25% of the hour of each hour. And that, again, that's the limit we were using for 100% work. So people can work safely at 100% effort from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock in the morning, no problem. 7:15 to 8 o'clock, we start to see these temperatures increase. And as we get, this is 8:15, 9:15, 10:15, 11:15 to 12, when usually most men are leaving the field. Sometimes they stay longer. But by 8:15 in the morning, we are clearly above the first limit. And we are actually we're above where OSHA says people should be working only 50% at full effort of every hour. And then as we get past 9 and 10, we're above, actually, where OSHA says in order to protect themselves, people should be working at 100% effort, only 25% of each hour. So that's important in and of itself, and it is a risk for heat stroke, which again is the fatal condition. But then there are two other reasons why I think we need to keep paying attention to this issue. One is an epidemic of chronic kidney disease that we have along the entire Pacific coast, in specific communities along the Pacific coast. In Costa Rica, in our case, this is the Guanacaste region, which is where we have the highest incidence of chronic kidney disease of non-traditional origin, which I'll talk about in a moment. But then also we have pockets here, and maybe Wyvon can talk a little bit about the situation in Nicaragua, which is very, very serious. And so that's happening, and it's happening. It's a five-stage disease, and it's later two stages. It's a fatal disease, and it's overwhelming the healthcare systems. This is a picture from a photojournalist named Ed Kashi who worked with La Isla Foundation. Because not only is it overwhelming the healthcare systems, you need dialysis or transplant to be able to survive in the last phases. The poverty conditions are such that since the hospitals can't take on these folks, many people are doing home dialysis in situations that are really, really dire, even things without, like being in situations without having running water. The other is climate change. And the most optimistic projections. I expect a 2-degree increase in temperature over the next 100 years. And so when we have a situation where we have workers who are already at the physiological limit of where they can work, those 2 degrees are really, really important. So I really think this is something we need to start paying attention to. The last IPCC report, this is from the fifth report, which just came out, finally mentions workers, but the fourth it didn't. It had maybe 2 or 3 lines about workers. So I think we need to start paying attention to workers in that climate, in the context of climate change. And there's actually quite a bit of literature to understand the acute effects of being exposed to heat in the workplace. And that literature comes from miners. There's quite a bit of work done in the 1950s from South Africa, from militaries, different countries, particularly the United States, to some extent Canada. Israel has done quite a bit of work trying to protect their employees, personnel in the military. And then the other group is athletes. There's actually quite a bit about how to keep athletes safe from heat and keep them hydrated. But we haven't done a good enough job of putting that into a more practical or our reality, which is workers, outdoor workers, and in many cases agricultural workers, and in many cases, as usual, the vulnerable populations such as migrant workers. And so some of the things that I am saying are based on one article that we wrote, Tord Kjellstrom, who's been instrumental in trying to call attention to the issue of workers in the context of climate change. And recently, APHA has really gotten on board with, they're starting to get on board with this, I should say. And this is an opinion piece written to the American Journal of Public Health last month, by Cora Reolis and David Wegman, trying to say that really workers once again are going to be kind of the canaries in the coal mine about the issue of heat exposure. And so this is, I recommend this if you're interested at all in this issue. So again, the context for us in Costa Rica, in the region, we need to intervene on heat exposure. Those men are in conditions that are dangerous. I think we are very clearly in a situation where we could be seeing, in fact, fatal outcomes. But then there's this whole issue of, you know, what's the outcome of being exposed continually day to day to heat? And no one really knows that. And one of the things that we think is possible is that kind of exposure is related to the chronic kidney disease epidemic that we're seeing in the region. And along those lines, it's time for heat and hydration policy in the region. And that would be a big thing for us, and we're starting to work with the Ministry of Health to try to do that. No country in the Americas has officially managed to get a heat policy, even though in the United States there are fantastic recommendations since 1986 and another one in 2013 from NIOSH and CDC, but they have not been successful at making it something that could be enforced federally. So there are great recommendations, however, and we can pull from those. NIOSH, OSHA has them, the industrial hygienists have them, the military, as I said. There's an athletic trainers association, they have fantastic guidelines that also could be joined or could be modified to fit the situation of workers. And finally, there are 3 states that have a statewide heat policy, this is heat and cold, but 2 for outdoor workers, and Minnesota has an indoor. But Washington and California have actually been quite successful at this, and Washington even has a fairly robust cost-benefit analysis. So the other thing that I wanted to say, when we start thinking about climate change, all countries have adaptation policies in place. Costa Rica has been fairly good at writing those and identifying vulnerable populations. But those vulnerable populations tend to be the classic ones. They are elderly people. They are people with mental impairment. But I think we really need to start thinking about worker populations as vulnerable populations in the context of adaptation plans for climate change, because it's not the population we tend to be thinking of, because they're young men who are workers, and it's hard to get our heads around the fact that that could be a vulnerable population, but it is, and it's actually hard to defend as well, because we rightly try to protect groups that are more traditionally the vulnerable populations. But I think the evidence is definitely there to do that. And the other thing, countries need to have a national plan for climate change, and again, Costa Rica has actually been fairly successful at doing this. And one thing, it sounds kind of funny to say here in the States, but heat waves here are on our radar screen. We get the idea of a heat wave. In the tropics, the idea of a heat wave just isn't really, you know, it's hot, it's hotter, it's always hot. But again, for workers who are at their physiological limit of where they can safely be working, a heat wave is really important because you can work a day in extra hot conditions, but if your body doesn't get a recuperation the next day or the next day or the next day, it's a more serious situation. So I think Costa Rica or the region in general needs to do a better job or start considering heat waves as an extreme event, and as so plan for that in an adaptation policy, and in that planning take into account workers. And then when you see recommendations for adapting to heat waves, they generally tend to be behavioral modification recommendations. So stay home, rest, drink water. And in a workplace situation, that's not something that workers are even given the decision-making ability in their workplace to do. So whenever we make recommendations, we need to take that into account. So to close, it just seems to me that I'd be interested in any input that any of you would have is whether or not, you know, a human rights framework is appropriate for addressing this issue, particularly in the context of climate change. So just to say again that this work comes from Irad Saltra in La Universidad Nacional, and it's part of doctoral work that I just finished in Umeå University in Sweden, where if you're interested in worker health or climate change and health issues, they're doing some really interesting work there. My three supervisors, Kurt Kellstrom, Katharina Westling, and Maria Nilsson. And if you're interested in the kind of documentation that exists out there, there's some ideas and my email. But thank you. That's enough.